or if it's not this building or one of its agencies doing it, another operator's ability to do it. So understand, the MPO is a planning agency. Somebody then needs to operate it. So don't think that the dollars aren't there to build robust systems today. They are. The issue becomes, where's the money going to come from to hire bus drivers, train operators, and things of that nature? So please don't lose, it's a multifaceted issue. So the money can be leveraged greatly. We can fill this county with hybrid buses big enough to stretch all over the world if we needed to. Today, the money's there. Problem is, there's not an operator that has funds to do it. So please, to the question of how do we get people out of the cars, part of it, it's an education campaign. Part of it is building a complete system that people will trust and rely upon to do it. Pick the city, New York, Chicago, Washington, go out west. You get out of the car when you have a reliable, complete, timely system. And until we get there, that will not happen here. The other problem we face is Broward County is built out, not by the cities, but based on what went on in this building over history of time. And now we are trying to retrofit the county for mass transit. And part of it is a difficult trying to put the proverbial 10 pounds of stuff into a 2-pound bag. But that's the reality of where we are, because streets are so wide, corridors only have so much space, and the question becomes, how do you do it? Because once you go vertical, the costs exponentially take off. You can build, like was contemplated for 595, a train upstairs and the roadway downstairs. But to put anything upstairs, the pouring of the concrete and the cost of elevating, whether it's a rail system or a roadway system, go up exponentially. So, and we only have so much space. Broward wasn't designed with mass transit in mind. So we're at it's an interesting time of figuring out how to do that. To the executive director's comment regarding regionalism, we're in an interesting place here in Southeast Florida because Broward County benefits from the current state of the law. If the governor had his choice, he would change it and do away with the local control we currently have in Broward County. If the three MPOs combined, we'd probably be the third largest MPO in the country. Other MPOs around the country don't want that to happen because they'd lose the money because the money would come here. So it is a fight for dollars. But there is a better coordination today than there ever was between the three counties. And Mr. Bascom, to your point, yeah, there's a big dog. It's Miami-Dade. When they say they don't want to play, they don't play. It's real simple. Part of moving to the regionalism is everybody wants to do it, but Miami-Dade wants it their way. You know, we work, you know, Broward's MPO and Palm Beach's work really well together. The problem is the county commission in Miami-Dade sits as their MPO. So it's a different group of folks that decide different things. So please don't misunderstand. There are inventories for everything, whether it's each individual sidewalk project in each city that goes to a bike lane. Each city knows what that is. But understand the bigger picture. These are planning dollars to pull down for projects, not O&M dollars. That's where the real problem is in the process of what this agency does.
May I follow up just a second? Just to build on Mayor Sturmer's comments, this last year we had $400 million fall out of the sky, and that was to build the managed lanes on 75. And it was a very robust conversation among the elected officials, not because they didn't want the project to go forward, but shouldn't we be funding the FEC project? Shouldn't we be funding this transit project? And as staff, it's really hard to turn to the electeds and say, we should, but we can't because you haven't identified a funding source to maintain it. And we do have a dedicated funding source to maintain our roadway network. And until that is addressed, as Mayor Sturmer has elaborated on, we can plan to our heart's content and we can find the money to do things, and we really can. But the leadership has to take a decision to fund the O&M. And that is something, as an MPO, MPOs typically don't run transit systems. And I don't think planners should run systems. I just have a bad problem with that.
Art, go ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair. To the mayor's comment about how do we get people out of cars, I can't tell you the number of Broward County Transit buses that don't stop for people waiting for the bus. I can't tell you the number of times I've seen people either running towards the bus as it's pulling away, or running after the bus as it's pulling away. And this morning, I do insurance work, I always have my camera with me, and this morning, Route 9, Bus Route 9 on Northwest 31st Avenue at Prospect, the man was coming northbound, the bus was going south, there's a guardrail on the west side of the street, and the bus slowed down, and he didn't stop. I couldn't believe it. And again, I was one lane over in the middle, he was on the far right lane. Then the man tripped over the guardrail. Again, I didn't get a picture of the man, but I did, I plan on taking the pictures, and I'm going to email them to Mayor Jacobs and whoever's supposed to be running the courtesy training for bus drivers, because if you depend, if your lifeblood is a bus to get you to and from work, or to and from whatever, school, college, and they power trip you, I mean, that's called situational power, and what are you going to do? You know, and I mean, I've spent time in New York, and I lived in New York, and certain municipalities, they will hold the bus for 20 seconds until you can run and chase it, you know, and that's how that young boy got hurt, trying to save the bus for him and his mom. So you'll never see me on a bus. I've never taken a bus, I've been here 29 years, because I don't think they treat the paying customers politely, and they certainly don't take care of the taxpayers that fund the whole operation. So that's why you're never going to get people out of their cars.
Well said.
I'm going to ask a few comments, and I'll get back to you. First, I agree with everything everybody said, I think, and I joked under my breath over here, and one or two people heard me, you get them out of your car by making it inconvenient. Until we make it so inconvenient, I don't think you're going to get people out in South Florida. And we've talked about this before, the Northeast corridor is a lot different in Chicago than ever, and to Mayor Sturmer's point, they were built with a kind of a ability to have a mass transit footprint to start with, and it was early on in their history that they had mass transit systems. Florida is going to always be a challenge because of the weather, the distance from your workplace to your home place, and how complicated it is to get there. So I don't know if and when it's going to happen. You can get all the operators in the world, if they don't have the ridership to pay the fee, they're not going to make money, and they're not going to operate. So it's great that you plan it, but unless the consumer wants what you're planning, you're DOA anyway. So until the whole community wants mass transit, you can build it, but I don't think they're going to come. I think they're going to hold out until they're inconvenienced enough where they have to get on the mass transit to get to work on time. Having said that, going back to your original presentation, sidewalks that you were talking about, the millions of dollars, are those only state, federal streets that you're working on, or those also include city roads?
No, actually, they are including city roads. We actually worked with the U.S. Department of Transportation several years back to allow us to flex federal dollars off the federal aid system. And the city of Fort Lauderdale is actually one of the first locations where we're starting to do that heavily, because they were participating very heavily in the 2035 plan, so they had a lot of projects put in. We have about $700 million worth of projects just in Fort Lauderdale alone, and majority of them are actually off-system streets.
Okay, so the process to pick was actually a level of participation, not necessarily a need or an aged or an infrastructure aging?
There's actually needs everywhere.
Understood, yep.
One of the things we constantly remind the elected officials that serve on the MPO is we have all of your city staff serving on our technical advisory committee. And in July, we sent out a letter, including the city of Dania Beach, and we said, give us your needs.
I don't represent Dania Beach, I'm not elected official anymore.
No longer.
I'm just a Broward resident now, so I'm just asking in general.
Broward resident with a lot of knowledge.
And frankly, I'm a native, so I've watched this age.
Then I'm going to move out, I'll just spend with fines, Mayor Ortiz won't mind.
That's okay.
So we sent a letter out to the different cities, and certain cities didn't respond, or just responded with the applicant's name, and said, we have no needs. And we can't come in and say, you must do this, we're going to build this in your neighborhood. That type of transportation planning has finally died. We're actually asking, do you want this? Does your neighborhood accept it? Would you like this? And then we'll work with the Department of Transportation and create the funding. It's not a top-down, you must do this, it's would you
No, and it shouldn't be, and that's why I was asking if you're establishing needs. I would ignore the politicos altogether on this. I mean, Broward County has an infrastructure. If I'm the bridge guy, and I'm sure you guys look at bridges, I first go at the age of the bridges and say, okay, who's ready for a makeover because it's 50 years old and it's outlived its usefulness that's on the books. That's the first bridge I'm going to tackle, right? So I would think we'd do the same with roads and sidewalks to an extent. I mean, if we're going to do things up new, or look, the next priority might be places that might be newer, but then and didn't have them put in, but they're required to be there, kind of. So.
We look at crash data.
We do the sidewalk program in Dania Beach, whether it's, we do actually solar lighting. We do sidewalks, and we do a 50-50 program, because I live there, not because I'm elected. But the point was, is we look at the needs based on aging and actual view of the actual infrastructure asset to see what's the most needed one to be replaced or changed out or modified. So I was just asking how the process was decided. But because you brought it around that way, it's kind of curious, because I want to know, how does that tie in? And, you know, I was on the MPO a few years ago, and we had the whole hub discussion. And the hubs determine financial resources. Is that the same for the sidewalk program and the complete street program? Is that also determined by the financial hubs and where they're located as far as funding, or is that a different set of money and comes in a different way?
We have multiple pots of money in how the funding works. And sidewalks, again, you know, there's more than just that. Are you willing? It's also, there's a crash data support it. Is there a project in that location that we can move forward with? Is it a resurfacing project? Is there a sewer system replacement project?
Right, being compatible with it.
We also look to be, you know, predatory, so that way we're not coming in, ripping up something once, and then ripping it up again, and ripping it up a third time. Those days are gone as well, because we have to be a little smarter with the money. As far as the hubs are predicated on boardings and alignings of a premium transit system that we'll want to develop.
Transit, right, okay.
You know, that's, our first hub is in downtown Fort Lauderdale here. It's actually where the FEC station will be located, and we'll wait for them to make their final announcement. But that will be in that location. It connects into the WAVE streetcar system, which, by the way, if we're going to have anything, that's where it's going to start. And our board 2 years ago also finally voted on the alignment for the WAVE becoming the east-west down Griffin and then out to Nova Southeastern, out to the new medical college, hopefully, if that happens. But all of those things are how you get there. The Complete Streets program, we actually have a Complete Streets committee. County staff actually sits on that as well. So does DOT staff, so does city staff. And they make recommendations. We take it to the board, and we say, this is what your technical staff is advising. We believe that they're advising the correct, and we move forward with funding.
Okay, one of the things you want to look at from sidewalk perspective, and this goes back to my ADA law background, a lot of sidewalks in Broward County are not ADA compliant and not even continuous enough for people with disabilities. To me, that should be one of the top priorities. The other priority, obviously, even maybe even before that or at the same time, is what we call walking patterns to schools, especially elementary and middle schools, the first time. So again, that's what I was trying to ask you, is there a rule, you know, everybody will come ask for the money eventually, but sooner or later, somebody's got to add some common sense to the thing and say, look, we got to get the kids to school safely. Good. We got to help people with disabilities. So that's, and you don't have to answer that unless you
want
to.
Well, actually, I do. I really want to touch on the school subject, because that was a big issue that we had up in Washington and in Tallahassee. We basically have a funding pot for the Safe Walks to Routes to School program, and we've been working with Mr. Runcie and his staff over there at the school board to make sure that funding comes in. While they have to come through our Transportation Enhancement Program right now, or Alternatives Program, we submit all of those up to Central Office for funding.
Okay. No, so no offense to the school board, but you might want to reach out to the cities on that. Cities tend to know, you know, a lot of cities even, I know in our city, we try to have off-duty police officers near some of the schools that are in question to protect the kids. So sometimes the school or the principal, and I know the school board will probably reach out to the principals, how do your kids get here? But they could probably help you devise those routes and figure out what they are and where the needs are.
I do want to touch on your maintenance issue for the sidewalks as well as ADA issues for sidewalks. Once a sidewalk is put in and it meets the standard code that is required, and whoever the maintenance agency, regardless, this is, goes back to O&M, it becomes a responsibility of the either local government, the county government, whoever that sidewalk belongs to, could be a property owner.
Correct.
And they must maintain it. So that's a different conversation.
Absolutely. And again, I'm not representing Dania Beach, but I'll tell you, we're doing ADA compliance around the city. My own neighborhood was ADA compliant relative to sidewalks. I was grateful to see it. So we also have something called the OASIS program, which is a lot like Complete Streets. So I'm going to ask the city staff to come see you and show you what we've been doing and see how it fits with your program. Because it is, to your point, definitely creating higher value for the properties that are along that street or that corridor. And we're doing it mostly on neighborhood residential street to improve the value of the neighborhood and stuff. But it does have a whole powerful meaning to the community and improving the community, improving the value of the properties. Lastly, one of my issues always with the MPO, and you know this, and I know Vice Mayor Blattner knows, is a small city representation. You know, the larger cities tend to have the bigger seat at the table, so they know more what's going on, they're more plugged in, and they pull more dollars in small cities. He gave me some good news a couple months ago, so this is the softball question I'm throwing you today, and that was, there might be a new committee started up for small cities and that sort of thing, so I would like you to address that issue, because that's always been one of the imbalances we've encountered.
We actually, we have an executive committee, and we expanded the executive committee to include a representative from small cities. In this case, it's...
Javier Garcia.
Javier Garcia from Hillsborough Beach, couldn't be a smaller city. And we've challenged him at the executive committee 2 weeks ago to, on a quarterly basis, pull together representatives of the small cities and just have a roundtable discussion on, are we meeting your needs? Do you feel well represented? How can we bring you under the tent more often and more frequently? So, yeah, we're doing that. But I will say this, that, and former chairs, Stermer would also recognize this. Sometimes, when we start our meetings at, what, 9:30?
Yes.
By 11 o'clock, some of those 19 chairs are empty of the prime members. And I can tell you that our Southwest Ranches is always there. Lauderdale by the Sea is always there. And many of those small cities end up being able to vote because the key city, the primary city, left the meeting. So we're doing two things. We're encouraging them to get together as a group of small cities and tell us if we're meeting their needs, and we're trying to include them in the discussion. Even though they can't vote, if there are 31 people there and only 19 can vote, 31 people can talk and express themselves.
Small cities defined as 50,000 and less, like standard non-entitlement?
Well, it's anybody other than the 19.
Okay. There you go. That's a good way.
Remember, the 19 includes four county commissioners.
Cool.
So it's 15 cities that are there and 16 that aren't.
Right.
I would like to add on to that. I'm sorry to do this, but the board actually recently voted a membership fee. And the membership fee is for advocacy in Washington, D.C. and in Tallahassee. I'm going to be taking an item to the board next month for a legislative position for Tallahassee, one of which our governance committee recommended, which was to change the law in Tallahassee to allow all the members to vote. So, you know, I have to work with my other partners at the MPOs around the country, or around the state, to make sure they're comfortable with that. A lot of the other executive directors are afraid of having larger boards and having more than 19 members. So it's a little bit of an uphill battle, but we think it's worth fighting.
No, and I'll be honest with you, I kind of agree with the other guys. 31 voting members is going to be a real, as they say, hurting a room full of cats and rocking chairs and stuff, but that's okay. Mayor Stermer.
Well, one of the nice things I will say about the MPO is 14 elected cities sit there as voting members, and most of them, most of the time, take off their parochial hat. And it really becomes a regional effort. We had the privilege when the first set of stimulus dollars came down as a board unanimously to vote for building the bridge that went from Deerfield into Boca. We know that's a finite little corner of the county, it's a finite road, but yet every representative government in this county voted for that project. Because we basically said, if we all start to be parochial, nothing is going to get done. So what's nice is this group of folks actually takes the bigger vision. Many years ago, folks in Deerfield Beach were not happy with me, and the conversation has resurfaced that says the Sawgrass Expressway can't stop. It needs to blow through all the way to 95. It can't become a signalized roadway anymore. We know for a variety of reasons in the past that didn't happen. Those reasons have changed. And the conversation needs to complete itself, because in order to make this county go, it goes back to the question of how do we move. There's got to be enough roadways that basically form a circle contiguously around this county without interruption. And that's what's coming. So what's nice is you actually get folks to take off the parochial I want it for me hat and put on the how do we get people out of the cars? How do we get onto mass transit? How do we get Ms. Graham into some form of transportation at some point? Yeah, and that's really how do we do it. And that's the beauty of it. Ms. Castro's point, and she sat on the board for many years, it is a struggle to ask for anything related to this in Tallahassee. Because at the end of the day, there are politics involved with the MPOs. We're here pursuant to a former governor's allowing the interlocal agreement to stay in place. And the problem is going to ask current government up in Tallahassee for something, be careful for what you wish.
But that's sort of, it's like what this board does. This board looks at what's best for planning issues in the county. The MPO board has, at least in the past 10 years, gone more towards that way. So it's, you know, kudos to them.
Ms. Kaplan.
I just wanted to get a clarification to make sure there's no misunderstanding. If we have the funding, then why do improvements seem to be stalled or slow in developing? And the second part of that question would be, if it is politically related, then how do we resolve that? Like, I as a layperson and all my friends, I mean, how do we get involved then to, because it's obviously impacting a lot of people.
All right, I'm going to do one more plug for another MPO program. It's called Speak Up Broward, and it's speakupbroward.org if you go to the website. We're actually rolling that out as part of our partners with Broward Workshop, all of our transportation partners, and it actually is saying, hey, this is what we need to do to fix our system. It's creating advocacy at the levels, not just politically, but at community levels, to say, what is it that you need to do something? We learned this from an experience that happened in Utah. Salt Lake City has a very robust transit system now in an area that is heavily conservative. And they were able to put something together by actually working with the communities, by the civic leaders, and saying, we need to get something done. The Federal Transit Administration has been a great partner in moving forward with this advocacy and education campaign that we have. And it's actually kicking off in January officially, but we're already having informal meetings. Actually, our next meeting is at DOT's headquarters, I believe, next week.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much, Mr. Stewart. We appreciate your time this morning. And now we're just on to R4. I want to take a moment of privilege. Mayor Fisher, as I told you early on when you all were gracious enough to elect me to the chair, were big shoes to fill. I've worked with him on this organization for about, I think, 4 or 5 years, and I think he's one of the most consummate professional business people, elected officials that I've ever encountered, and I think we're going to miss his presence and his leadership and his experience immensely. As far as I'm concerned, I want to wish him the best. I told him whenever he needs support and whatever he does in life, feel free to give me a call anytime. And I know he'll let us call him if we have to ask any questions or deal with it. So because he's not going to probably make it back for any kind of presentation or whatever, because he's just, you know, that humble about it, I just want to take a moment, put something on the record that we can send him the minutes and tell him how much we're going to miss him. So if anybody else, Mr. Hobby, we can just go this way and then we'll go that way if you want.
And I'd like to say I've served on this council at least continuously longer than anybody else, and have seen quite a few chair people, all of them very good, but I think that with all due respect to them, Lamar, there's nobody better than he in running a meeting and having everybody leave smiling, or at least, if not smiling, at least he spread the dissatisfaction fairly evenly. I've known Lamar for a number of years and been involved with him in a number of organizations. And he is a person who doesn't call attention to himself. He's not bombastic. He doesn't talk even that much at most of the meetings. But every organization he's involved in is better for him being on it. So I was very disappointed to see him leave, but I know that we'll be seeing him in a lot of other guises.
Absolutely.
Outstanding service, outstanding professionalism, outstanding person. He'll be missed.
Thank you, Mr. Bascom.
I agree. Well said, Tim, and he will be missed.
Thank you, Ms. Graham.
I did not have the experience on this council with Mayor Fisher, but when I was given the opportunity to consider serving with my colleagues now, my first step was to go back and look at the minutes before I jumped in to see what I might be getting into. I was happy after reading the minutes to see what an amazing meeting he ran, the level of professionalism from all of my colleagues that are here and were on the, and the commitment. But it was clear that this was a top-down influence, that when you stepped in this room, it was about the broader issues for the county. It was not acceptable to be parochial, And this was perhaps the legacy that now I know, Madam Chair, you also carry, which is to make sure that we are committed to our job in the most professional way. And I thank Mayor Fisher for instilling those principles in this council.
Thank you, Mayor Ryan.
I also didn't have the pleasure of serving with Mayor Fisher too long either. I did, however, have the pleasure of attending one of his commission meetings as well as this, and he is as professional there as he is here, and always welcoming with a smile. And I second his emotion about Chair Castro. I feel that I'm learning a lot from you also. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Stand-up guy.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Mayor Blattner. Yes, sir. Commissioner Holmes.
I think if he gets these minutes, he's going to get a big head. So let's keep it in perspective.
For the record, Commissioner Long.
I've served a seafood festival with him before, so I see the other side of Lamar. Lamar is a great guy. I mean, inside and out, professionally, governmentally, not much to be said. We are going to miss him, but I know he left us in good hands.
Thank you.
And when I joined this group, he was the chair, and he is the utmost professional. And I just have to say he's got a kind heart and that glowing smile. And he will definitely be missed participating with us, but we know that he will be participating in other ways. So.
Madam Chair, my only comment would be, we understand that Mayor Fisher may not come here. But whatever I think our tradition is for recognizing past chairs, we do that and send it to him.
We're going to do that.
He may not come to us, but we should do whatever we do and get it to him.
We plan to do that,
okay,
sir.
I just wanted to...
But would have been nice to present it and say these things in person to him. That was our point today, but yes.
I would offer a friendly amendment to that, and perhaps a volunteer from the council would actually go to the city commission to present that.
Good
and
idea.
Request some time.
Absolutely. We can do that. We'll call him in advance and book it. It's okay. We'll make sure it gets done well.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to serve as long as many of you have with Mayor Fisher, but the short time that I did, I saw the compassion, the ability to give you the opportunity to speak and the professionalism, and my friendship outside of this council with Lamar is just a very nice, outstanding man. As a matter of fact, I was at his city hall the other day and I looked him up and he was not there, but he made sure to give me a phone call back and said, sorry, I missed you. Look, you didn't know I was coming. You didn't have to apologize, but you know, so we're gonna miss him. And I'm sure whatever he does in his future will definitely be top notch, so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Consummate professional. In my relationship with the mayor as an elected official, the short time here on this council, any of his civic responsibilities, his business responsibilities, he's an absolute gentleman, pleasure to work with, and he served this council well. He'll continue to serve the community well.
Thank you.
Well, as the new girl on the block, I did not have the pleasure of working on the council with Mayor Fisher, but I wish him the best in all of his future endeavors.
Thank you, Ms. Kaplan.
I've been a new guy on the block. I wish I, based on everything I have heard, I wish I had the opportunity to have him as chair. Sounds like a great guy.
Thank you. Thank you all. Remember, get your parking things validated, money in the food cup, anything else before we adjourn. We stand adjourned.